Hey everybody, welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans episode 223. Glad to be back. Hope you had a happy Thanksgiving. Hopefully you're recovering on the treadmill here and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans to get you through. We are brought to you by two awesome sponsors and we have an awesome show for you today. So let's get to it. One of them happens to be Wolf Nation, WULF, that is Wake Up, Live Free Apparel. They make designer clothing for men, women, children. You got to go check their stuff out. They're making snapback hats, leggings, sweatshirts, designer clothing for everybody. And go help them out. Entrepreneur, bringing up a new business, trying to get it off the ground. Go check out wolfnation.rocks. Wake up, live free. It's only a dream if you're not pursuing it. We are also brought to you by Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Trivia Revolution is a trivia company based out of the state of New Jersey, where they do trivia every night of the week in beer bars and breweries all over the state. You can be in last place and win a prize. It's just a fun night out. There's a bonus item on Facebook and Instagram every single week. So go give them a follow on Instagram and check out where they are close to you. That, again, is Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. All right, today we're joined by an up-and-coming musician that I have fallen in love with, not personally, but his music, over the last few weeks. He goes by the name of J.S. Ondara. He's from Nairobi, Kenya, and he is touring here in the United States right now with Lindsey Buckingham. Yes, that Lindsey Buckingham of Fleetwood Mac. And we got to interview him for a little bit. He's got a great story. And best of all, he has awesome music. I think you guys will really like it. He's got an album coming out in February. So if you like the interview, check out his music. And then, prepare yourself for the album that's coming out. Fascinating guy. So with that, guys, enjoy the podcast. J.S. Ondara.
Hey, this is J.S. Ondara, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hello, and welcome back to another weekly installment of your favorite show, your passion project, your General Hospital Verbal Shenanigans. I think we're like the General Hospital podcast.
How so?
We've been on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
We have weak plot lines.
Makes sense.
We have thousands of pathetic people that listen to us weekly.
I have an evil twin.
An evil twin?
Wait, yes.
Is that part of General Hospital? I don't know anything about General Hospital.
Well, that seems like the daytime soap kind of deals.
Ah.
Is that the one? Yeah, Izzy watches that. In fact, I think she did tell me there was an evil twin on there. Something about a guy who's a doctor whose evil brother was in a mental asylum who found a way to switch them, and now he's running the hospital.
So exactly, very similar to our show, is what I'm saying.
If you're keeping track on that plot line, you'll love Verbal Shenanigans.
But anyway, buddy, everybody, welcome back to this week's show. I'm happy to be back. Had a good one last week with KB, Nashville rapper. Burla, did you work on your beats? You said you were spitting beats last week.
I'm heading down to Florida, leaving around 3 tomorrow. I feel when I'm in the sun, my brain gets a little break. I feel the flow is just gonna dominate my mind, and that's when the sick beats are gonna arrive.
All right. Well, please make sure to record these beats for the audience. They're dying to hear your beat skill. You didn't really show it last week. Let's just say that.
If I give you my best stuff on week one, what are you going to tune into for week two? Come on now.
Dude, this is...
We're in the entertainment field.
Right. Well, we are 223 of these in. So, and lucky us, we decided... We'll give you a little insight. We decided we're recording 4 interviews tonight. Now, there won't be four interviews on this episode. That would be insanity. But we're piggybacking recording here, so we're in for a long haul tonight.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's time for a guest, Mike. God damn it.
But I figured I'd start with just real quickly. There's a news story just popped across my feed that I thought would be fun to share. So the headline, Mike, is Stink Hits Darts Grand Slam as Match features Flatulent End. Okay.
Interesting.
Yes, yes. Gary Anderson and Wesley Harms both deny responsibility for the rotten fart smell during the Wolverhampton tournament. Okay. The world of professional darts. You're a big dart guy, right? You go and play darts nightly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's, old Bullseye Burlew, as they call me.
Didn't we play darts once and, like, Izzy threw them into the ceiling or something? We played something.
Yeah, we played darts once before. I think Izzy accidentally took off the feathers of the dart at one time. I think that's what it was.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, you know, Bullseye Burlew, you would appreciate this then. The world of professional darts has been rocked by two players accusing each other of repeatedly breaking wind during a match. Gary Anderson of Scotland and the Dutchman Wesley Harms blamed each other for rotten farts during their clash in the Grand Slam of Darts. Anderson, who has twice been world champion, won the match 10-2 to earn a place in the quarterfinals of the competition.
Mm-hmm.
But in a post-match interview, Harms said his poor form was due to Anderson breaking wind on stage and leaving a fragrant smell. He went further while speaking to Dutch TV station RTL7L. It'll take me two nights to lose this smell from my nose. When Anderson in turn laid the blame at Harms' door, the Dutchman responded, "If the boy, Anderson, thinks I've farted, he's 1,010% wrong. I swear on my children's lives that it's not my fault. I had a bad stomach once on stage before and admitted it, so I'm not going to lie about farting on stage. It was bad. It was stink. Then he started to play better, and I thought that he must have needed to get some wind out. If somebody has done that, they need to see a doctor." Seemingly, he says, it was me, but I would admit it. Anderson has admitted to farting on stage in the past, though it was clear that he has never used it as an advantage.
You know, this reminds me of the famous Wimbledon tournament where everyone swore Martina Navratilova was just breaking wind through the entire set. But, you know, so I'm used to these kind of controversies.
Yes, yes. So we got a real fart gate on our hands.
Yeah, darts doesn't seem like the game where you need a high-protein diet where this would occur a lot. I don't feel they got rock-hard bodies throwing them darts.
So you're saying it's one of the sports you can be pretty out of shape in?
It's probably the one you could be the most out of shape of and still be dominant in. I mean,
now,
in NASCAR, you need some kind of health and all to deal with the heat. And if you lose power steering and all, you're basically lifting a car, pushing it into the corner. So
speaking of that, Dale Earnhardt Jr. was on Joe Rogan this week. Pretty fascinating interview. Just how much he was dealing with concussions and how much he didn't tell people and his rehab back. So if you guys, I'm sure you've all heard of the Joe Rogan experience, but you should listen to Burley. You should listen to that episode. I think you'd find it pretty fascinating.
I've heard some of his stories. Yeah, it's interesting since concussions weren't really known in the NASCAR world. I mean, I obviously hear it from football and hockey and stuff like that, but these guys are hitting walls at like 180 miles an hour, and they just kind of hold it back because they know, you know, you miss a couple races, it's over for you. You're not going to be able to do anything, and just think of the guys who are lesser than Dale Earnhardt, where you sit back saying, "Man, if I lose this sponsor, man, I don't know if I got a ride next year or anything like that." So it kind of opened it up when he kind of started missing some races in the end, just basically said, I can't race anymore. I want to have my brain.
Yeah. I mean, he was talking about, like, you know, for days he'd be getting sick and throwing up every time he ate, and he had problems walking straight, and it was, like, pretty extreme, and he, like, really barely told anybody. He would just be like, "Oh, yeah, my head hurts a little bit," and, you know, no one would really say anything. And then he finally, you know, committed to this guy and that works with like the Penguins and the Steelers, who helped like rehab him back. And like, there's all these exercises you can do to bring your brain back. It's pretty amazing. And I assume we're going to be hearing a lot more of that going forward with sports and whatnot. But
so more about concussions and less about farting darts.
Well, let's get back to that. Let's get back on our podcast. You'll hear a lot more of these type of situations. You think you could be the most out of shape in darts? I'm trying to think of any other sports that bowling, I don't think you need to be that good of shape. Maybe you have one good arm.
You would definitely, I mean, that's where I would say you have to be a little bit healthier than, I mean, you also got to remember, you got to have the approach, you got to have back strength.
Okay.
For bowling.
So you're all right. A dart is pretty much, you know, a couple ounces, right? A dart, you know. So yeah. I assume you can play it like sitting down if you had to.
I wonder if that's like a rule. Like, I remember that we had the big thing about the guy who needed to use a cart.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't give him his PGA Tour card or whatever you call it. And then he had to take him to Supreme Court. I wonder, I mean, could a person in a wheelchair be a professional dart player?
Now, I'm looking at the two. Gary Anderson, if you want to Google him on your end, Gary Anderson, he does not look like he's in the best of shape. He actually looks exactly like a kid I knew in high school, which is kind of weird. And then Wesley Harms, farter number two, or, you know, fart gay here, he looks pretty good shape, man. At least in the picture he does. And you know, like you would expect, they have like sponsors on their shirts, and it seems to, I guess somebody's out there watching it is the point. But now my question is, do you think the announcers were, you know, did they catch wind of this? No pun intended. Like, did they, you know, were they like, you know, Gary's complaining to the official about something. What could it be? Or is this something that completely was revealed after the match is what I'm wondering.
Well, I can't imagine them being too close to the play, if you will, while they're doing commentary. In all seriousness, I don't know, dude.
Well,
like, is darts like golf where you gotta be quiet when they throw, or is it like any other sport where while it's going, you just,
Well, put it this way. The announcers can't be that far away, because I can't imagine there's a dart like like Coliseum where they're broadcasting it from. So whatever bar or alley they're at or whatever, I can't imagine it's gigantic where the announcers are in like a skybox doing the live feed.
The Blimp is outside Scott for this amazing dart event. We keep reminding them we're inside of a bar. You can't really see anything coming over here. Goodyear, buy their tires.
Yeah, you see that like Axis cam that flies over like the quarterbacks and stuff like that, and flying over the darts. But I guess like out of shape, you could be a first baseman. We've seen a bunch of those over the years. You could be, like I said, bowler, darts,
long snapper.
Yeah,
football,
yeah,
because he can't even touch them.
That's true. I guess you could be fat and just really good at snapping the ball. A lot of sports you can't be. You can't be a fat jockey. You can't be a fat basketball player. Not really. There's only been a couple of those.
You can be a fat golfer. John Daly was famous for that.
That's true. Fat golfer. But I feel like even a golfer, your body starts to break down a little bit. You got to be in some shape. I mean, look at Tiger. Tiger was ripped, and he got all banged up and twisted up. So, I don't know. We should try to get both of these dart guys on the show and really
have them debate it out.
Yeah, maybe really get down to the nitty-gritty of this. Or, you know, they can come on separately and argue their case. But if we could ever get them on together, that would be podcast history.
Now, what we can do is we can get the two together,
yeah,
and we'll get an official from the event. And we'll give them both, like, Mexican food and let the official decide which one was closer to the aroma of that evening, if you will.
Right.
You know, what really investigative detective stuff going on here at Verbal Shenanigans.
Well,
we will get to the bottom of this.
It would have to be the same official, though. Like, it would be hard to get all three of these guys. I'm sure their dart schedule is just, you know, loaded.
It's through the roof.
Yeah. I guess you could be an out-of-shape, like, horseshoe player. I've seen a lot of those. I don't know if that's technically a sport somewhere. But if darts...
I was about to say, can somebody get paid for that? I know darts is huge in, like, the UK, and it's pretty equivalent to, like, cricket and
archery.
Like that, where,
yeah. But if darts is considered a sport, you got to consider horseshoes a sport, right? You're throwing a heavier object. You're throwing at a target. It's, you know, kind of similar in a way.
It's similar in a way. I'm just asking if there's an actual professional league and all. What's the one with the beanbag that they throw?
Yeah,
that
cornhole.
We talked about cornhole. Yeah, that I could. You could probably be a fatter cornhole player than a fat dart player.
So you're saying the cornholers are probably heavier than the dart throwers is what you're saying.
I'd say they could be less athletic than dart players.
Apparently there is the NHPA, which is the National Horseshoe Pitching Association. Okay.
Oh, of course.
So that looks like it's pretty official. The 2015 on ESPN Horseshoe Tournament. Okay. All right. The rules of horseshoe pitching, masters traditional games. Well, it's a sport, man. It's now, if you get paid, I don't know if you can... I don't think pay counts as a sport because we've interviewed a couple people who do sports and really didn't get paid. You know, like we talked to the curling guys and they barely made any money.
And but they're in the Olympics. There is events and there are certain items and they do get sponsors. So I would, it's a rough item. And then we can dive into our friends at World Chase Tag. I mean, obviously you got, I would like to see a fat World Chase Tagger. That would be. Yeah, you got 3 minutes to get to the other side.
I'm looking at the pictures. I'm looking at the pictures of the horseshoers, and they are all exactly what you would picture a experienced horseshoe player to look like.
Who has the best mullet of all them, Scott?
Nah, it's just more age. It's more a guy wearing Marine Corps veteran hat, a guy with a neck brace, a guy with a horseshoe man tattoo. The average age here, Mike, is looking like 75.
So you're saying I can get in there and be like the hot rookie of the year in my 40s?
I don't think so, though, because listen. When I was living in Rockaway, New Jersey, I played on the volleyball team. There was like in the lakes that like they played other lakes like in neighborhoods, and there was also a horseshoe team. Now I played a little horseshoes in college. Like we actually dug pits in front of the dorms and brought in sand, and it got pretty official. And I thought I was pretty good, you know. So I said, "Oh, there's a horseshoe team. I wouldn't mind playing with that." Now I get to they're like, "Come on out, you know, you could try out. If not, you could be an alternate." There's four guys. Okay, one guy. It was like a, you know, like if you're gonna make a movie like Dodgeball, how there was like a certain character for each guy. Like an one guy wore doctor's gloves when he threw, like he didn't like to get his hands dirty. One guy was like kind of like a pretty boy, like an Italian guy with spiky hair. But the main guy, they called him the captain. Okay, and he had your typical old man hat that was like embroidered, custom embroidered, like the captain. He could barely walk. His knees were – he'd hobble up. He even had a stick that he would use, a special metal stick that he would pick up the horseshoes with. If he threw 10 throws, 8 of them were ringers. Like ka-ting, 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 ka-ting. You know, meanwhile, smoking cigarettes. He's got his beer koozie that – says the captain's drink or something like that on it. And you could not touch these guys. I was not even, I had to be alternate for one match, and it was like a charity. Like it was like, oh, it was like the Make-A-Wish kid was there, and they're like, okay, let him throw some shoes. Like it was bad, dude. And like you play on a team, so when it would come to my side, the guy I'd playing was like, you know, he'd get 3 ringers in a row and I'd get nothing. So every time I'd go back, they'd be like another 7 points on top of the score. Needless to say, they were not very happy with me, and I only really lasted one season. But I think horseshoes, you might get better with age.
Like a fine wine, horseshoes.
Right. Like, because think about it, once you get that balance and that aim, I mean, as long as your eyesight's not completely gone, I bet you, like if you're pitching shoes every day, you know, there's not much. That's just like a lot of muscle memory.
Yeah, I guess it's true. And professional beer pong. You could be much fatter in that.
Oh, yeah. That was one of my favorite games. I was good at that. You could be super fat in that. So
yeah.
Well, now that we brought the – I mean, we'll have to look into, like, sports you could be fat in, and maybe we'll have to rank them where you could be the fattest. We did interview the world's largest female athlete.
Female
twice.
Sportswoman. I guess she's listed as.
Yeah. So there you go. Yeah. You can be extremely fat during that. And now she's like a wholesome grandma that lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, she lost like 100 pounds, she say, something like that.
Yeah, because she's beautiful, that's why.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's time to get to one of our guests here. All right. So a couple weeks ago, my friend Bill, he was actually in the show a long, long, long time ago. Best musician I've ever met. Works in a recording studio. We actually set up gear for the Rolling Stones before, and Metallica, like all this ridiculous stuff. He posted a recording of this artist named J.S. Andara. Okay, and it really sounded awesome. So I started listening to the guy's music. Fantastic music. And he's actually originally from Nairobi. And I really think this guy is going to blow up. I think you're going to hear his music pretty soon. And I know he's got a new album coming out soon. So we were able to get J.S. Andara on the show. So let's do it.
That sounds like a plan. We're able to get him, so we will put him on.
All right, here we go. Hello.
Hello, Scotty.
Hey, is this JS?
This one, how are you?
I am great. JS, first off, thank you for you and Jamie for setting this up, for giving us a few minutes here. I'm Scott, and that's Mike there. You'll hear him on the other end.
Evening, JS.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Doing well, my friend.
Now,
cool.
JS, I had never heard of you up until a few weeks ago, okay? And my friend Bill, he works at SST Studios, where you recorded some tracks.
Oh, dude. And it was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And he posted, I believe it was American Dream, the first one he posted, a clip of it. And I was like, wow, you know, this music sounds really good. And for the last 2-3 weeks, I've basically been playing you in the car pretty much every day. And I kind of looked up a little bit of your story and find it pretty fascinating. So first off, the music we're hearing right now sounds terrific. So congrats on that, if that's what the album is going to sound like eventually.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for listening.
Oh, yeah, man. Now, yeah. We got to start at the beginning a little bit here. You are originally from Nairobi, correct?
Yeah, born and raised.
Now, first off, what is a childhood like in a childhood growing up like in Nairobi, and how did you actually find yourself getting into music?
Childhood in Nairobi, you know, I don't think it's it's any different because you know when you're a child you're busy growing up,
right?
You know, you're worried about. You're not worried about too much. It's just, oh, when am I going to get my next toy? Or maybe when am I going to get a glass of water? So, you know, it might seem drastically different.
Right.
But, you know, when you're a child, it doesn't really. You're just, you know, you're just a child and that's that.
Right.
Right.
So were you always a music kid? Like, did you play anything or were you... when did you first start discovering like instruments and not only and your voice?
Right. Yeah. I mean the journey, I suppose, to the discovery of music is what might be drastically different from what is normal out in the West out here. And we didn't really have much growing up. You know, we had food and place to sleep, and you know, there was always like this tiny little radio, which had like a battery powered radio.
Okay.
Yeah, that's just one of the things we always had. And that was the first thing. My first source of music was just this tiny radio, which was always set to like a rock station. That's how I first heard sirens and started, singing.
Now, I read over on your website, As a side note, I don't know who wrote the Starred and Striped Fairy of the West, but congratulations to whoever did that, because that reads almost like a movie. That whoever wrote that was beautiful.
I wrote that.
Well, you did a fantastic job. Like, I was reading it. I just heard like a narrator telling your story reading that.
Thank you.
But I read up how you originated as a fan of rock before you moved on to another sound, but I just love that. Sorry, can you tell us about you losing your bet about Guns N' Roses in
Canada? Yeah, totally. So I grew up listening to a bunch of rock songs, and, you know, I fell in love with rock music, and I always assumed the music was just loud. That's just what music was, because there wasn't so much exposure, so you just sort of know what you know. And then I was in high school at some point, and, you know, we were, you know, after school, we were outside, and I'm having this debate with a friend. You know, we used to have all this sort of arguments all the time, this silly arguments. This one time, it just happened to be an argument about Knocking on Heaven's Door, the Guns N' Roses song. Quote unquote. Quote unquote. I mean, I was pretty confident too that Guns N' Roses song. Like, you know, this guy, and I thought, you know, I know my music. What are you talking about? And he goes, "Well, actually, no, it's by this guy called Bob Dylan." And I'm like, "What? What are you talking about? It's obviously a Guns N' Roses song. I will fight you for this." And it just turns into this whole huge fight, and then we make a bet. And you know, it's like, I think about that sometimes. If you're like out here in the West, and it's like you have a debate like that, you just get your phone real quick, you look up the internet,
right,
and you find the answer. But that wasn't a thing. So, you know, you just sort of argue about stuff until, you know, a couple of days later, when someone has gathered up some cash to go to the cyber cafe and figure out the actual truth.
Now, in your piece, you say you were pretty inspired by Dylan. Why do you think Bob Dylan's music kind of seems to... Now, you how old are you?
26 at the moment.
You're 36?
26.
Oh, 26. I was like, no way.
I wish I was 36. That would be great.
So why do you think Bob Dylan's music seems to... It constantly transcends another generation, and seems to skip and always find new fans constantly. What about his music found you? Because I wouldn't say your music is very similar, but I do see like a freeness in what I've heard in your music that kind of reminds me of him a little bit. But why do you think he keeps popping up?
That's a good question. And I think, you know, that same question is what intrigued me the most when I was, you know, finding out about him for the first time. It's just, you know, he's had this super resilient career for such a long time, overreaching influence. And I was just like, you know, I was just a bit like, what? How come I never knew who this was?
Right.
You know, for me, it was a lot about the novelty of it. You know, it was just... I'd never had music that raw, really, and written in that fashion. So when I heard like Free Willing, I was just like, wait, is this like music like people listen to and it's popular? You know?
Right.
So it was just this sort of like, whoa, what's this? It's just this novelty thing that I hadn't heard before. And, you know, the more I dug into him as a, you know, as a character and as a, just as an artist over this generation of time, became pretty fascinated by, you know, him as a person and his resilient career and his sort of, you know, romanticism. And, you know, that fascination, I suppose, just kind of took precedence
right.
For me for a while. Yeah.
Now, how does a boy from Nairobi who's hearing music on a battery-powered radio, who's hearing Dylan, who's hearing bits and pieces of rock and roll, how does that boy transcend and end up in Minneapolis and end up in the United States as a musician? How did that happen?
That's drastic. I I said some magic words, and then I found myself in Minneapolis.
Wow, that easy, huh?
I was like, a la Kazim, but then... I'm in the cold city. I mean, it took a while for me to figure out that I could do music or that I wanted to. Because, I mean, I'm just from this place where, you know, Korean arts is not something that's encouraged or something. So that's, you know, something that I suppose was stifled for a long time until I was like, no, this is just what I want to do. And when I figured out, you know, I wanted to do it, I knew pretty quickly that I needed to, you know, to come out here to be able to do it properly. And so I tried all kinds. I tried to come to the States for a while. I wanted to go to the U, University of Minnesota, because I thought that would be like that. I wanted to go to Minnesota because it was this, during this time, I was fascinated by Dylan. I thought it was this sort of spiritual journey following him behind. So I applied to the U, never worked, tried a bunch of stuff, never really worked. And then just randomly, I won a green card and ended up here after everything else had failed. So it's pretty fortuitous how that happened. I was like, you know, I spent the whole night watching like Game of Thrones, this random night in Nairobi. Yeah, I just watched Game of Thrones the whole night, and it's like I get to sleep around 7 in the morning. I'm trying to catch some sleep, and then my sister comes knocking on the door, and she goes, "Hey, you're going to America." And I'm like, "Hey, stop." I haven't slept all night. I'm trying to catch some sleep. Stop messing with me. And she goes, no, seriously. You're going to America. I don't know what happened. It looks like you're going to America. Everyone's freaking out. I'm like, guys, stop. I'm trying to catch some sleep. And then she keeps bugging me. So I'm like, I'm going to wake up and go to the bathroom and lock the door. So I wake up to go to the bathroom, and I see my mom out there just crying. They're like, oh, I think something must be the matter here. Maybe I am going to America. So it happened in a pretty just random, fortuitous way. But it's something that I wanted for a long time. So,
So when you got to the States, what do you think was the biggest thing you worked on with your sing? Was it your songwriting, your voice, instruments? What was the first thing you really worked on to get to where you are right now?
I mean, the first like thing I had to work on was trying to like teach my skin to not freak out when it's cold. Nothing is as important as that, really. Because, you know, I think about it, like,
did we drop him?
I don't think so. It's right before you dropped out, you were talking about your skin getting cold.
Totally. I don't remember where you guys dropped off. I was probably talking to myself for a while there.
Come on, that's not unusual.
I think about it, like moving to the States. Just this stupid vision of, you know, trying to be a folk singer, not really knowing anyone that would help me do that, or even knowing how to play guitar. There's just all this levels of impossibilities. But then the hardest thing really was just getting used to the cold.
I was gonna say, so we're pressed for time here. So you are able to become this musician, and obviously you're touring right now with Lindsey Buckingham. What is that like for you?
It's amazing, man. It's incredible. It's a great honor to be able to do it. I wake up every day and I'm like, oh, you know, this is life now. It's a bit crazy just to think of.
I mean, you go from Nairobi to opening for an all-time icon in rock music. I mean, it's got to be very daunting task almost, or almost like something that's very hard to believe.
Yeah, it's everything you think it is. it's as crazy as you think it is, yeah. It's just being from where I'm from and growing up listening to all these songs, couldn't really fathom this at all. So it's quite incredible, and I feel pretty very grateful to be able to do it.
Now, you got to tell us about the album coming out on February 15th. What's the album like? What's it going to be called? What can people expect if they've never heard your music before?
It's called Tales of America. It comes out in February next year. I believe it's February 15th. And it's basically a documentation of my time here in America thus far. I deliberate on the times that we're in at the moment and try to find answers when I can or not. it's basically just some stories, you know, about me and about my time in America.
That's awesome. Now, if you guys haven't heard JS's music, you obviously should go look him up on Spotify and Instagram. But where's the best way to communicate with you or say hi or check out what you're doing?
I suppose Instagram's a good place to find me. I'm a fan of photography, so people find me there easily. But once the record's out, it's also going to be in every platform where music is.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, I got a question for you before you go, okay?
Yeah.
Me and my co-host here have been debating this pizza debate, okay? Now,
you said pizza?
Yeah, pizza.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
First off, what is it like? Is there any pizza in Nairobi at all?
That's a very good question. that's just a super random question.
Oh, I know.
So I believe there was pizza in this one particular place. I think it was like a chain of an American place too.
Okay.
I forget where it was.
Wow,
but
even in Nairobi, huh?
It was, and there was like a Pizza Tuesday thing. Seriously, so it wasn't like, it's not very popular
right.
at all. it was like in this sort of like rich neighborhood too. So it was maybe people who were very westernized or whatever, watched too many movies and like, oh, hey, we should rob this type of pizza place. You know? Like, all these people who are watching all these movies would probably be into that.
Now, step two of that question is, did you ever have pizza before you got to the United States?
No, I did not.
Okay. Step three, here's the real, you know, pressing question. Have you ever tried pineapple on pizza?
Oh, no. Is that a thing?
It is.
Wow.
Scott, this guy doesn't even know that much about pizza, and he's already telling you that doesn't sound right. I'm just telling you.
That sounds strange. That was not Scott or Mark. That's strange.
I'm losing every week more and more and more. But, JS, I want to thank you so much for giving us a few minutes on the show, and I can't wait for your album to come out. And the music is killer, man, so really keep it up.
Thanks so much. Thanks for the time, and I appreciate it.
Well, Berlo, there comes a time in life where every man must admit defeat at some point in his life.
No. See, I think you got to double down, Scott. I mean, you heard his story, how he came from a country where they don't really believe in, like, music entertainers, anything like that. He kept working on it, and he built it, and he's going to make it.
So you're saying
what you should do is you should go to that neighborhood in Kenya, Nairobi, that has a pizza place and put your own Scott Brennan's Verbal Shenanigans Pizza Hut right next door and just serve pineapple pizza and put that one out of business.
You know what, Mike? You're a dreamer, and I appreciate that. And you know what? Maybe that's what's in the cards for me. Stand up, yeah. You know, pizza guy by day, comedian by night, all in Nairobi, Kenya.
Exactly.
This is about as profitable as your snake milk idea, but
yeah,
I'm into it.
But still, if it works out, it's the most epic story to ever occur. That's the most important thing.
My bio will look so much better than his on on his website. But that was cool. J.S. and Dara, guys, I really recommend checking this stuff out, especially if you're into like singer-songwriter, some soulful. It's just good. There's not a lot of songs up yet, but
I'll tell you one thing. He does a Christmas song that I actually like, which is pretty rare. Okay. Check it out on YouTube. J.S. Andara, O-N-D-A-R-A, and the song is Mother Christmas.
Yes, and his video for Lebanon just came out, and that right now that's like I've been bumping that song every day on the way to work, so check it out. I think you'll like it. It's very, very hard to deny the guy's talent. So you got to check him out and look out for his album coming out soon, a couple months. All right, brother, what you got?
Well, let's start off. I'm going to bring back a little game that we did once before, Scott. Today we're going to our little game called Don't Blame It on Florida. Scott, so many times we do news stories on this show. We do Dirtbag of the Week and various other weird stories, and it always comes back to our friends in Florida.
Bear news. So, I feel like a lot of those are in Florida.
So I have five different weird news stories here, Scott.
Okay.
And I need you to tell me which one did not have anything to do with the state of Florida.
Okay, so didn't I have to pick out the one that didn't happen in Florida?
Yeah, okay. We have five here. Four of them came from Florida. One of them did not, and it's your task to figure out which one.
Let's sniff it out. Let's go.
All right. Story number one, accused of a crime straight from Seinfeld. Brian Edward Everidge is accused of bringing 10,000 bottles in aluminum cans in a budget box truck into a neighboring state where the deposit is 10 cents coming out of a state which doesn't pay anything for cans. It is illegal to return bottles that a person knowingly did not get in the state. He is charged with one count of beverage return of non-refundable bottles.
What are you in here for? Beverage return.
Well, the funny thing is, the felony is punishable by up to 5 years behind bars, a $5,000 fine, or both.
Jeez.
Everidge was arrested back in April when he was pulled over for doing 12 miles per hour over the speed limit on the highway. Clifford Lydon, the officer who pulled over Everidge, noticed a lot of plastic bags filled with aluminum, more than 10,000 in total. When questioned, he arrested the party.
Wow. I just want to preface this. Why? When you brought this up, I wanted to check out our Florida audience. We're okay, Perla. We in the last month, do you want to take a guess how many downloads we've had in Florida?
Six.
Close. Nine. We've had nine total downloads in Florida. So I'm okay with tearing them apart a little bit. So my initial reaction to that, I think that sounds pretty Floridian to me. So my initial reaction, I think I'm going to hear the next one.
All right. Principal accused of stealing $900 from a 9-year-old special needs student. Edward John Aberthy is accused of pocketing $900 of over $2,000 from a wad of money brought to an elementary school by a 9-year-old student with a mental disability. On October 23rd, the 9-year-old brought $2,100 of his parents' money to school. Once the teachers were made aware of the large sum of money that the student brought to school, they reportedly took it from the child, counted it, and then locked it up in Aberthy's office. When the student's mother went to the school to retrieve the money, Aberthy allegedly only returned $1,200 of that $2,100. Detectives think Aberthy pocketed the difference.
Now, my question is, what is a special needs student going to school with $900 for.
No. $2,100. The principal stole $900 of that $2,100.
Okay, even worse. Now, where are these – a nine-year-old, where is he getting that money from?
I guess the parents are just leaving around huge wads of cash, and the kid's just like, ooh, play money.
I mean, I feel like this one's on the parents. I feel like they almost need to lose $900.
Maybe the principal's teaching them a lesson. Hey, you leave your cash out for your little kitty. Guess what? I'm taking some.
Yeah, maybe Christmas time will come and they'll send it back with a little note like, please don't send your kid to school with $900.
That's what we call a life lesson.
Yeah. I'm initially thinking this is also a Floridian man. I also think I may have saw this story somewhere along the week. So it does sound familiar. And usually when things are weird or wrong and they say Florida, I just go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And kind of put them in the back of my head. And this one was kind of in the back of my head. So I think it's that. I think that's Florida, too. So go
all
ahead.
Right.
Go ahead.
Number three. Crocodile takes a bite out of crime when half-naked man breaks into the exhibit for a swim. A nine-foot croc took a literal bite out of crime, chomping on the foot of a half-naked man who broke into the crocodile exhibit in order to go for a swim. A bizarre sequence that was caught on video. Brandon Keith Hatfield, 23, was charged Wednesday after he allegedly broke into an exhibit at an alligator farm zoology park the night before, took a dive in the crocodile exhibit and caused more than $5,000 worth of damage, police said. Workers at the farm were baffled early Wednesday when they discovered a trail of blood on a platform along with a pair of shorts and, fittingly, a single croc shoe floating in the crocodile pit. The bizarre scene prompted them to search their surveillance video where they discovered an equally unusual sequence of events. The park security footage shows a man entering the park around 7:45 and jumping into a pit from a 20-foot roof, taking a swim in the crocodile-infested pool while knocking down a statue.
So right away, this screams like hallucinogenic drugs, like methamphetamine and flocka, I know is big down there, and like bath salts and those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy jumping 20 feet into a crocodile pit, like... seems like something that would happen in on those drugs and in Florida. I think it's too this story more than the other two is just too Florida for me. It's so Florida. So I am also my thought process right now is that one is Florida too. So
all right,
we'll see.
All right, man allegedly pours cup of semen on Panera customer,
Georgia.
God, I told
Mike
you.
Berlin.
Wait to the end. The victim screamed when she realized the liquid substance in the cup wasn't soda. A man facing charges after police said he dumped a foam cup containers of semen containing semen over a woman at Panera. Police arrested 28-year-old Patrick Bruce on Tuesday and charged him with two counts of battery, indecent exposure, and commission of a lewd and lascivious act. Police said on September 12th, Bruce allegedly entered the restaurant and stared at two women who were dining and doing homework. He then moved to a table close to the women while continuing to stare at them. The women told police they saw Bruce leave the restaurant and return with a foam fountain drink cup. Bruce then allegedly went into the Panera bathroom. When he came out, he allegedly poured the contents of the cup on one of the women, saying, "Here you go." The woman screamed when she realized the liquid substance in the cup wasn't soda, police said.
God.
The victims told police Bruce apologized before driving away. Panera employees told police that Bruce dropped his cell phone at the restaurant. When they looked through it, they found a video of the suspect doing something into a cup matching the one he held during the alleged incident.
I don't know. The older I get, like, stories with, like, body fluids from someone else on someone else have been, like, really grossed me out. Like spitting on people is horrendous. Like, I'd rather get punched in the face than you spit on me. Like, that's so gross and insulting. Yeah. And this is just a whole other level. Like, I'm trying to think if I put myself in that scenario and someone did that to me, what I would do. I think I would see red. Like, I think I would just black out in anger, like, and lose it. Like, I'd end up getting arrested because of someone doing that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what's really a shame was he didn't buy a cup at Panera to do the act. I mean, he went out and got his own cup. I mean, that was really cheap of him.
He got his own dick cup. What do you want?
I mean, the least you could do is buy a small coffee and do the act. I mean, come on.
This one's like neutral for me because I could see a creep like that living in many places. Like, I feel like I've seen guys in Jersey that I'm like, that guy probably would do something like like that.
Like when we listened to the Dumb Fellas podcast. I was just gonna say
KP Burke. Like, when I look at KP Burke, I'm like, he would do that. But I'm right now, this is the one I'm leaning to. But I gotta hear the fifth.
All right, and the fifth story: man tells police his dog shot his girlfriend. Diesel fired
Berlu,
the gun.
Are you planning something?
No, Callie. Hit the trigger.
Put that Diesel. Gun down. Put that gun down.
Officer, all I heard him was in the other room sounding like a dog or no. Who's a good boy? Who's a good boy? Yeah, protect everybody. I will.
You protected us, didn't you?
Diesel fired the gun when he jumped on a nightstand, his owner says. When police asked a man how his girlfriend got shot in the leg, he blamed the dog. Police responding to a 911 about a shooting Tuesday night met with Brian Murphy, who told him his dog Diesel had accidentally shot his girlfriend while she was in bed. Murphy told officers he and his girlfriend, Summer Miracle, that is his girlfriend's name, were sleeping.
Florida.
were sleeping when Diesel woke him up wanting to go outside. When Diesel and Murphy went back into the house, the dog led way into the bedroom. Murphy reported that he then saw a flash and heard a bang. He told police he thinks Diesel jumped off on the nightstand, causing a gun on it to fire. The bullet from Murphy's gun hit Miracle in the leg. Murphy told police he covered Miracle's wound with a towel before calling 911. Miracle's not sure how she was shot. She told police she just awoke when the bullet struck her. Miracle was treated at a hospital for injuries that did not appear to be life-threatening. No charges currently.
All right. This one also to me screams, the setting screams Florida, the names in the story scream Florida to me, blaming animals for things screams Florida. So let me recap. I got the recycling guy, my own handwriting.
All right, so we have the recycling guy. We have the principal accused of stealing $900 from a special needs
crocodile.
We have the guy jumping into a crocodile pit. We have a man pouring semen at a Panera restaurant. And we have the man telling police his dog shot his girlfriend. All Scotty, which one do we not blame Florida on?
All right, well, let's try to make this exciting, like game show. I'll eliminate one at a time. Okay.
All right.
I guess I won't eliminate. I guess I will say one is Florida. Okay. And then I will try to get down to the one that I think is not Florida as my last one. All right.
Gotcha.
I'm going right away. I'm going to start with the principal. Just seems pretty Florida to me. It just seems like very loose school district. People are coming in with $2,000 cash. It seems like anything goes down there, and that seems to be Florida's motto. Not the Sunshine State. It should just say anything goes. Principal is from Florida.
Scott, you are correct.
All right. One for one. All right. Bro, the one that stood out the most Florida story to me. Now, I don't know if you're putting this in to throw me off, but it didn't seem like you did, it seemed very far to me. It had gators. It had Crocs. It had definite drugs going on. It had leaps of faith into the pool. It just seemed so Florida to me. So the next one I got to eliminate, and I think it's from Florida, is definitely the Crocodile Pit.
The Crocodile Pit occurred in Florida.
All right. All right. All right, baby.
All right.
All right.
Got a good game going here.
All right.
Three left.
Next one that also screened Florida. Now, the two of these, like the crocodile one and this one, I thought maybe you were putting up some red herrings in there to try to throw us off. But I'm going to go with my gut here. And I think the dog shooter, the guy who blamed the dog for shooting, it could be somewhere else. It could be, but it just sounds crazy enough to be Florida. So I'm going to go with dog shooter in Florida.
That dog was not a good boy, but he was from Florida.
All right, let's go, baby.
Down to your final two.
All right. So as I had stated when you were kind of saying the story, the semen at Panera seemed universal weirdo. That could have happened. It doesn't scream Florida to me. The guy bringing recycling, I mean, you know, going state to state, just seems like a country bumpkin kind of thing to do. You know, someone just trying something can also be pretty universal, but I'm going to go with the recycling guy is also from Florida, the glass guy.
So you're saying the recycling guy is from Florida?
Is
from Florida, and yes. The other one
is not
from Florida.
Yeah, I'm going to go with my gut. Yes, final answer.
Well, Scott, the cans came from Kentucky, and he was going to Michigan. I'm sorry. The masturbator was Florida. You blame the wrong person.
It seems so Florida to me. It seemed it seems so universal, the guy with the cup. Like, I've seen weirdos that I'm like, he definitely like smells people's seats when they leave and does weird things. You know, like I've seen guys that I question and I judge immediately just by looking at them. I wonder if I listened to the if I listened real closely to the recycling story, would I have figured that out? Like Kentucky and stuff, or was it anonymous?
Well, the one part that you might have got it for is where I said where he would get a 10-cent deposit. The only state that goes that high is Michigan, and that was a part of the Seinfeld episode where they were trying to figure out how to get cans to Michigan.
Well, I came close. My gut led me down to one story off. I was one story off. But
yeah, it was a fun event.
You know what? I think this is a perfect time to bring back an oldie but a goodie. Let's cue the Florida commercial.
Florida, the Sunshine State. Your number one destination for your ideal vacation. In Florida, we have something for absolutely everyone.
Me too?
Beaches, beaches, beaches. Enjoy those incredible beaches with soft sand, warm water, and beautiful sunsets. From South Beach to Miami, there's a bit of sunny paradise for everyone. And guys, think about those beautiful ladies. Beaches not your thing? Well, take a quick trip to one of our thrilling theme parks. Both Universal Studios and Disney World are sure to tickle your fancy.
I want to go on the
Here you'll experience thrilling rides, expensive tickets, talking mice, and middle-aged men wearing goofy t-shirts. Florida is loaded with amazing things to do. Nightlife and art and shopping, oh my! Enjoy the sights, enjoy the sun, and even enjoy a piece of our mouth-tingling key lime pie. Right, Brian Iverson?
Hi, Julie.
Sports your thing? Of course it's not. which is why there is no reason to waste time watching any of our putrid sports teams. Go Dolphins! Yes, Florida.
You know where I could score some meth?
Other than our amazing entertainment and things to do, the best part of Florida is our people.
Sure is, son.
Let's review some of our amazing people that have come out of Florida in just this past calendar year. Meet Mr. Alberto Felipe, a man who bit his neighbor's ear off because he refused to give him a cigarette. Florida, Florida, Florida. Meet Mr. John Harper, age 46, a man who drank 5 gallons of vodka and lived to tell about it.
That's
Floridians are determined. Oh, and how can we forget Miss Darlene Danahy, age 40, who hit her husband in the face with a spatula and threw his chicken into a nearby swimming pool. We are animal lovers here in Florida. Florida! Screw the other 49 states! Florida, you have the freedom to do whatever you like. Just ask Mr. Fernando Aguilera, who on December 17th tried to trade an alligator for beer! Genius! Anything goes in Florida. People are determined. Just ask Mr. 40-year-old Stephen Grady, who's facing charges for beating his daughter for 40 straight minutes to the tune of Robin Thicke's Blurred Lines. Experience the supernatural, the unknown in Florida. Just ask 41-year-old David Allen Jensen, who tried to break into a hotel because zombies were chasing him. Come see the Florida zombies, people. Ah, Florida, where not only do we showcase our moral compass, but we also have unique spirituality. Just as Robert Mackey and Paul Truccio, who after committing murder, threw a head into the Everglades and soon prayed to the alligator god that he would eat the remains. Praise reptile Jesus. Praise him. So if you're planning your next vacation, please make Florida your first choice. Florida is a blast. Just ask Florida resident George Zimmerman.
Stand your ground.
Florida, the Sunshine State, where bath salts are free.
All right. So I had an interesting weekend. I did a pretty really really beautiful show in the room and the crowd was beautiful, but in Collinsville, Connecticut. Yes, it was called
Rich People's Country.
I guess so. Connecticut doesn't have much of an identity, though. Like, you drive through Connecticut, you don't like feel like, oh man, I'm in Connecticut. You just feel like, I don't know, it's like a blank canvas to me. Sorry, Connecticut listeners. but so it was basically a 3-hour drive. So you know, there's a little anxiety about going that far and the gig just stinking. Like, I guess for veteran comics, it doesn't matter. They're used to the road. But this is one of the further gigs I have ever done. And I was going by myself. Originally, I was going to go with the fiance. We're going to make a day out of it and, like, explore. But she had work stuff. So went by myself. And it turned out to be just a beautiful venue. Probably, like, 125 people there, 150 maybe. I'm not sure. Beautiful venue, just really good show. But I had come home, and on Saturday we had celebrated my dad's retirement. Went out with a bunch of the guys, and so I stayed over at my parents' house on Saturday, and I'm leaving on Sunday morning after breakfast, and my parents know I love, like, leftovers. Like, I could feast on, like, cold leftovers all the time. Like, sometimes I don't even heat them up. Like, a cold meat, cold leftover chicken, whatever it is.
That was a story you brought up once before, wasn't it? Where something like that was a rally cry in high school. Cold meat!
No, that was on my adult basketball team. Me and the one guy, we would pump each other up just be like, cold meat, baby! Like, he'd be like, you're on fire. I'd be like, I'm so on fire. I feel like devouring some cold meat right now. And we'd just, like, symbol each other across the court, like, cold meat! But yeah, I'm a savage when it comes to leftovers, which is nice because the fiance, she don't really like leftovers are not her thing. She doesn't really ever really go back. So I love when we actually have leftovers because I know they're mine. Or if she like goes out to eat and brings something home and she usually doesn't eat it, I'm all about that.
Nice.
So my parents are like, oh, you want this leftover meatloaf for a snack? I'm like, sure. Why not? So they put it in a little bag, and we're packing the car, and we have Obi, and I put it in a little bag on the floor. We drive home, and we stop at the farmer's market where we usually stop and to get some vegetables for the week and whatnot.
Leave with that cold meat. I like it.
Yeah. Leave Obi in the car because he's a royal pain in the ass when he's at the farmer's market. He, like, pulls me and always wants to play with the other dogs. And it's, like, hard to shop for vegetables when you got a 75-pound dog pulling you in different directions.
Yeah, you don't know if you're getting the proper squash if you can't just sit there and concentrate.
Exactly.
That's a well-known fact.
You can't feel the texture of the squash or the size or does it have any bruises. So I come back. And we go back to the house, and we go to unpack the car, and I hear Alex just start laughing. And the dog had ripped open the plastic bag and, like, sucked the meatloaf completely out of the bag. just has a look of guilt on his face.
it's like the cartoons where they just poke a hole, put a straw through it, and then just – engulfs everything in it.
Yeah, not a crumb left in the bag. Not, and keep in mind, we were only in the farmer's market maybe 15 minutes. So he just sucked it down, left no evidence initially, no like sauce on his face. He wasn't licking his chops when we got in the car. And then all day yesterday, he's just lying on the couch and you just hear it, like, you could hear his stomach going. Like, you could actually hear it. And he just did not move all day. Like, I'm pretty sure he had a meatloaf hangover.
He's like rubbing it in your face. Oh, Dad, that called me. Oh, that was so good. Bet you wish you had some, but no, you had to go to the farmer's market. All mine, baby.
What's funny is I was hungry at the time, and I was going to eat that the second I got into the house. One time I remember back in the day, I had a party. Everybody got, like, you know, liquored up, fell asleep, passed out. And we had pizzas, a couple leftover pizzas on the table. I woke up in the morning. There was, like, one box on the ground with no pizza in it. And no one could remember if there was pizza left. And sure enough, he slept the entire day, just, like, breathing heavy. Like, oh, oh.
Just don't know if I'm gonna live, but that was worth it.
Just some ridiculous cheese hangover, but yeah. Well, he's alive and happy, and bastard got my meatloaf. Is what I'm saying.
Ah, man, it's going to be hard to live. You know, go through the whole weekend knowing there was cold meat there for the taking, and bread and butter couldn't capitalize on the situation.
You don't have like a what's like your go-to like snack if you're like. If you're hungry and you go in the fridge, are you looking for a sweet, salty? You looking for ice cream? You looking for what's your thing?
I'm pretty balanced. I try to keep stuff out of the house just because if it's not in front of me, I don't have that many cravings. I can go for a while without like snacking it up. And the thing that will kill me is if like we'll have like family over and we'll buy a bunch of different things and then it's. I looked at the leftovers. I'm like, now am I going to eat this? I'm probably going to eat this in like the entire day. Like,
right.
Something that should last me 4 days. It's like, I don't know what happened to that bag of Doritos, you know? I would say that's probably my number one go-to. Doritos, that's my snack.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. See, if Doritos were in the house, I would eat them. I'm kind of similar to you in that aspect. I don't really try not to buy too much junk. Now, perfect example for me. I eat out of like cravings. I've been eating the same way since I was like a kid. Like not what I eat, but the same thing. Like I always have to have lunch. I always between when I get home from work and dinner, I always have to have. I come home like so hungry. I'll eat anything in sight. Now, if we are on a shopping week where we got some good stuff in, I'm like, oh, that's okay. It's like some pretty decent snacks, whatever. But if we're on a week where we're like, you know, there's nothing in the house and Alex keeps chocolates around, that's when I'll start feasting on those things. And I don't even particularly like them that much, but I'm eating out of like necessity, like a bear in a garbage can. Like, and then I always feel like sick afterwards. I'm like, ugh. Like, I always ramp it up to level 10. I never take it at like a calm 5, have a little snack, and then cook dinner. I always eat a lot and then go, oh, crap, like I didn't need to eat that much. Peanut butter, sometimes I'll knock out a jar of peanut butter. Like not the whole jar, but a good chunk, and I'm just eating it. And then I'll look at the calorie count on like a scoop of peanut butter, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Peanut butter is like the most deceiving calorie-heading kind of item in the world. And I mean, it's got fat. I mean, it's good for the – it's supposed to be quote unquote the good fat, but goddamn, if you pile down 2 teaspoons and all, you basically ate your calorie count for the day.
Oh yeah, and then when you plow down 10 to 11 spoonfuls, like I do, and you realize you just had 1,500 calories in peanut butter in one and a half minutes, it's not a great feeling. It doesn't make you feel great about yourself.
No, you know. Now, after you have the 10 teaspoons, do you play Chubby Bunny?
Oh, God.
Don't look back at that episode, people. That's one I could say you can hold off on.
Yeah, that's probably not our best.
KB Burke was cool, though.
Yeah. He's all right.
Yeah.
But I guess it's time to go. I think it's time to get out of here.
Sounds like a smart move. Yeah. I got to get on the road at 3 in the morning, so yeah.
I mean, we covered it all. Fart darts, music, you know, we covered it all here today. Cold meat.
That's the normal. I mean, every time Don Bagnano puts on one of the episodes, he's like, again with this.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
Our cold meat segment of the week. Perlu, anything to promote before we get to hell?
I don't have anything crazy, but since we're seeing on the news all the terrible things happening down in California with the wildfires and people losing their homes and people are dying, let's help out our fellow people by going to redcross.org. Give some money out to help people. There's people who are homeless, people who are trying to find loved ones. So all we can do through this tragedy is try to do what we can and give. So again, go to redcross.org and help the world out.
Wow. Help the world out. You're a real sweetheart. You know that?
Now, you know, I tried. It's not like the early episodes where I said, screw the world. I'm the Burles. Now, I'm only here for podcasting.
Now it makes it really hard for me to promote one of my stupid shows after you promote, like, helping people in wildfires.
Well, if you were a good editor, you would put your show first and then my whole charity thing.
Well, you know damn well I'm going to forget that. So yeah. I'm going to promote a show on December 29th. Reason I want to promote that one, I know it's a little ways off, but I am actually co-headlining the show with Jimmy McDonald in Kingston, New York. Kingston, New York. It is at the Art Society of Kingston, or ASK. So if you go to askforarts.org, you can come check me out. I'll probably be doing about a half hour that night. So you're either going to see my best half hour or my worst. So either way, it'd be fun for you. So get tickets there today.
Yeah. 20 minutes of crowd work about cold meat, people. That's what to look forward to.
I'm bringing out my best cold meat material, I promise. I absolutely promise.
Oh, honey, he's doing the ham bit.
Oh, I hope he closes with the prosciutto bit. I hope he does. But
so I was looking in my shoe. I know where this is going.
So I want to thank our guests and go make sure you go check them out, guys. With that, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Adios, everybody.
See ya.
looking to see this ride.